It's my game right here. I feel it. I'm telling you, I feel it. I taste it. Sometimes you be legendary right here, boy.
This is First and Pod.
They could not run the ball to save their lives in this game.
Your favorite team through a national lens.
The beauty of this podcast is that we don't gloss over anything. We do every team in every game.
Instant reaction to all the big games all season long.
The NFL never seems to let us down when we need a banger, banger.
Now, here are your hosts, Andrew Filippone, with 8-time Pro Bowl corner and 3-time first-team NFL All-Pro.
Peterson may go all the way. He will. Patrick Peterson wins it.
Patrick Peterson.
All right, it is Wild Card Recap edition of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game every week. We did it for all 18 regular season weeks, and now we have moved into the playoffs. Talking about the 5 games that have happened so far and the 1 game that's going to happen tonight between the Steelers and Texans. Andrew Filippone, Patrick Peterson, James Jackson. It was a record-setting weekend of NFL playoff football. The first 4 games had more fourth-quarter lead changes combined than any NFL postseason ever. Every team that won the first 4 games trailed going into the final 2 minutes of the game. And then we had Chargers-Patriots, which was nothing like the other games, and we're going to break them all down, beginning with that game Sunday night, James.
Yes, I tried to warn everybody about the Chargers, who I just do not trust really ever. And Justin Herbert kind of painted the picture well, man. He says, I just can't feel, I haven't figured it out yet. So the Patriots as the number 2 seed defend their home turf in Foxborough in a big way, hold the Chargers to, 3 points in the game. So, Pony, I'll start with you. How did Drake May and the Patriots look as legitimate Super Bowl contenders, and where did this game kind of go awry for LA?
You know, I was never really nervous, like completely nervous, that Pat's Super Bowl pick and my Super Bowl pick were going to like straight up lose the game. There were some anxious moments, though, like the interception on the early by the tip ball.
Yeah, backed up.
Yep. You know, when they were driving the ball and then there was the strip sack fumble too that took points off the board for the Patriots. So New England's got to clean some things up offensively for sure. But their defense, and I thought that the broadcasters did a good job of this, Tirico and Collinsworth. I don't think their secondary gets enough credit. I thought Christian Gonzalez played an awesome game before he left with a concussion. I think Marcus Jones, who's an awesome return man too, Pat, might be, and he's kind of like you, return man and corner. He might be one of the most underrated players in the NFL.
Yeah.
And they took advantage of the Chargers having the biggest Achilles heel of any team that made the playoffs, and that's their leaky, shaky offensive line. So to hold the Chargers to 3 points, even with some of their offensive problems, is a testament to just how far that defense has come under Mike Vrabel. And they've cleared their first hurdle here. The question for the Patriots was, can they beat good teams? They did not play a lot of them. They played New England. They played Buffalo twice, went 1-1, and they lost to the Steelers at home. This was an 11-win team, even though it had warts, and they ended up getting the only double-digit win of Wild Card Weekend, what turned out to be the only comfortable win of Wild Card Weekend so far here, Pat.
Yeah, man, it was that game was an interesting first half. I wasn't sweating at all about the New England Patriots because the defense had the game in control. They probably blitzed more this game than they ever had throughout the entire season just because of the line problems that the Los Angeles Chargers have been dealing with throughout this season. I believe I saw something that they had 31 different offensive linemen combinations this year, and that's always a recipe for your quarterback either being banged up or not available for you in the long run, and he was one of the two. You know, so they have to find a way to get healthier, you know, especially in times like this when they need guys, their protectors to protect their franchise. And I believe that's something that pretty much held the Chargers offense back. You know, Hampton wasn't in the lineup. McCaughey wasn't able to create any separation. Justin Herbert was flustered their entire game. There was a point in the second half where Justin Herbert was 1 for 7 and 0 yards. It was almost late in the fourth quarter. I'm like, man, did Justin Herbert complete a pass in the fourth quarter yet? And I looked up the stat and it was one and it was for 0 yards. So it wasn't his best performance. And I hate to say this, but and I hate that it's this way, but a lot of quarterbacks, especially franchise quarterbacks, a lot of their career and their success ride on playoffs. And Justin Herbert right now, not saying all three of those playoff losses are on him, but he's 0-3 right now in the playoffs. So the biggest question now is when is Justin Herbert is going to start getting some of that Lamar Jackson scrutiny, when he's going to start getting that Trevor Lawrence scrutiny, or that Dak Prescott scrutiny. It just seemed to always to get a hall pass when he doesn't play well in the postseason. But
Pat, this has been a long running conversation on this podcast, even before we got you to sign on 2 years ago, which was incredible when you decided to do this. This has been one of my pet peeves for years, is that there's a double standard with him.
Yep.
And the two things he gets benefit of the doubt on are excuses like the injuries, the offensive line. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that people just give him credit for, which they don't really do with anybody else, is they say he passes the eye test better.
Right.
He throws a better ball. He moves better. So he gets credit for looking good.
Potential. But
not playing good.
Exactly. You know,
the offensive line last night was not good, but two things can be true. The offensive line didn't protect him well enough. The times he did get protection, though, he didn't make enough plays.
Yeah.
He missed guys downfield. There were opportunities, and he didn't cash them in. He's 0-3 in the playoffs now. His three losses are to Trevor Lawrence, C.J. Stroud, and Drake May. Those are all good young quarterbacks,
yeah.
But it's not like he's lost to Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, and Lamar Jackson. He's making a ton of money. There should be more criticism on him. If more people cared about the Chargers, which they don't, they play second fiddle in L.A., if more people cared about them, he'd get talked about a lot more on shows like this.
Yeah.
But they're kind of out of sight, out of mind. He doesn't play in Philadelphia. If he were the Eagles quarterback, it would be nonstop whether or not he's the right guy for the job. And so he gets off easy, as it turns out, because he has played three games, an awful second half against the Jaguars, four interceptions against the Texans, and then last night where he was held under 200 yards in a playoff game.
Man, sacked six times.
Yep.
And for the New England Patriots, again, I never worried about not once in that ball game, just because of the New England Patriots that did a great job all year of taking advantage of the team weaknesses. So whatever the team wasn't good at, the Mike Vrabel team was going to make sure that they explored that team weakness. And they found that, like I opened up my segment about the blitz rate. This was the most that the New England Patriots have blitzed anyone all year long. So they knew that the Chargers had a problem with protecting. They knew that the stunts and the different blitz packages was going to confuse those guys, and that it did. My only concern on the offensive side of the ball is got off to a little bit of a slow start. Wasn't able to finish in the red zone.
Red zone's a big one. They were 0-3 in the red zone last night. Yep.
Red zone, not able to finish in the red zone. And Drake may have to protect the ball better when he's in the pocket. That eternal clock has to go off a little bit quicker. And you could just tell that the first playoff game jitters were there, and the second half kind of settled in, used his legs a little bit because he was missing throws as well early on in that ball game. Throws that we did not see him miss all year long, you know. So maybe it was a little bit of playoff jitters, but they got their first playoff win. They played sound football, didn't play amazing football, but they got the job done and moving on to the second round.
I just haven't figured it out yet. 7 years, $262 million on a contract. I don't think any other quarterback with those credentials can really get away with saying something like that.
But he will. He's 100% going to get away with 100%. That.
Oh, yeah.
And to your point,
they're gonna brush it under the rug and talk about what they expect to see next year.
It's Lala, especially with, you know, his coach is going to be a big kind of adversary for him too. But Pony, to your point, he would not still be the Eagles quarterback with being 0-3 in the playoffs. Speaking of the Eagles quarterback, he's having a tough day too, because Pony, somewhere the golden underdog is growling. He's in his cage growling. Yeah, get him out. There he is. I knew he was there somewhere.
Back, baby.
Because Kyle Shanahan.
He needed some water in his bowl.
Hey, man, Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers go into the city of brotherly love and cause some turmoil, to say the least. We'll get to all the kind of residual effects this loss had for the Eagles. But let's talk about just the game in general, because the 49ers dethroned the defending champs. So, Pat, how did they get it done, and how do you feel about them moving on to the next round?
Oh, man, that game was a slow first half as well. You know, both defenses was playing well. The Philadelphia Eagles held Christian McCaffrey, I believe, up into the fourth quarter to 25 yards rushing, if I'm not mistaken.
Finished with 48
yards rushing. And then, you know, the 49ers defense was doing things that, quite frankly, we didn't expect them to do. You know, we know that the Philadelphia offense is, you know, is not hitting on all cylinders. They've been trying to find their way throughout the entire season. And the 49ers took advantage of that. Although the 49ers don't do a good job of getting pressure on the quarterback, they got to Jalen Hurts a little bit to fluster him in the pocket when he did decide to drop back, or when Nick Sirianni, the offensive coordinator, did decide to dial up a pass play. I felt like they did a good job on Saquon Barkley. He did have a nice game early on in the game, but in the second half, they did a great job of clamping down and make sure that they didn't allow him to wreck the game and allow him to beat them. But the biggest thing to me was that fourth quarter. Juwan Jennings, the way they opened up that fourth quarter and got Christian McCaffrey kind of going. I believe that is something that opened up the game. The Philadelphia Eagles offense was kind of stagnant for the most part throughout the game. They had a couple of drives in there, but you can tell that it was something that was not going to be sustainable, because they haven't been sustainable all year for them. So the Philadelphia Eagles, they're probably definitely going to fire their OC, because his play calling and all the talent that they had and getting the results that they got this year is definitely unacceptable. Jalen Hurts is a quarterback that thrives off RPO, using his legs and putting the pressure on opposing defenses, because when your quarterback is the added, you know, ball carrier, that just puts another layer on the defense that they will have to study for, will have to worry about. And for the most part, I played in the league for 13 years. That's one thing I hated going up against, was dual threat quarterbacks that are able to extend time, because now receivers are running routes that, you know, that we don't even study for. They're just running for running to open space, you know. So for the most part, man, the 49ers did a great job, and they opened up the fourth quarter, got Christian McCaffrey going, and defense made a big stop down the stretch to eventually get that win. And the Philadelphia Eagles on their side, too many drops, too many miscues, too many penalties at that as well. It had some big plays, but they were stalled out by penalties on first and second downs, holding calls, things like that. So they played very, very undisciplined, not like the Super Bowl champs that we saw going that playoff run last year. But it just caught up with them. They was never in sync all year. Defense was pretty much the bright spot for that team, and they had no room for error. And when they gave up those two plays in the fourth quarter, both to Christian McCaffrey, the game was kind of—I won't necessarily say out of reach or out of hand—but we knew that it was going to be tough for the Philadelphia Eagles to try to drive down and score seven versus trying to get 3 points to tie the ball game up. So it was a well played game by the 49ers, and Kyle Shanahan is continuing just to show that, no matter who's in the lineup, missing George Kittle with the Achilles, no Fred Warner, Fred Warner, it don't matter. These guys look and face adversity in the eye and don't blink. And you can tell that these guys relish the moment of that next man up mentality.
six straight games to end the season by the Eagles against playoff teams, and they didn't score 20 points in any of those games. So the offense has to undergo change in the offseason. Jalen Hurts has had a new offensive coordinator. Every year he's been a quarterback, college and pro. It's going to happen again this year, even though the OC there is Nick Sirianni's best friend. He's going to be left no choice but to either demote him or just fire him altogether. It's too big of an underachieving season by that unit that had just won a Super Bowl to allow for status quo. I honestly think there's blame to go everywhere. The play calling, even your fourth down plays, just four vertical routes. I mean, it's the season on the line. You got to draw something up. What's your got to have it play? What's your best play? They didn't have anything. They didn't have anything for them. Now, how much of that is the offensive coordinator's lack of creativity, imagination? How much of that is Jalen Hurts just not being a great passer of the football? I don't know. We're going to find that out next year with a new offensive coordinator, I would think. I would also think A.J. Brown's career is done in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He had three catches for 25 yards. Look, you know, Brady's on the broadcast trying to say, this is good. Everyone's competitive. Everybody's an alpha male. Everybody wants to win. Yeah, there's a difference between having a disagreement with your coach where you're yelling at each other and literally having your noses pressed up against each other and being so animated that you're spitting in each other's faces. I mean, to me, that crosses the line of what would be a productive debate among two people in something that seems way more personal. And that's what that looked like. And obviously it didn't manifest in anything positive. It's not like that was fueled. It fueled A.J. Brown to play better or Nick Sirianni to coach better. Brown came out and dropped a ball like right after that.
Yeah.
What I don't get about Hurts is, in their offense, you've got Barkley, who in a lot of ways is like Christian McCaffrey in that he can do everything. How is he not a bigger threat in the passing game at all, Pat? The whole year. They don't do screens at all. I mean, can Hurts not throw that ball? Does he not have the timing for it? It just doesn't make sense to me. And as far as the 49ers go, I've got to tip my cap to Purdy. I know we threw two interceptions in the game, but to be down the number of good players that they're down, DeMarcus Robinson went over 100 yards. He turned him into a weapon in this game. The guts of Kyle Shanahan to call a trick play late in the game to win it. And Juwan Jennings has done that in the Super Bowl.
That was to open up the fourth quarter.
Right.
That was the first play out in the fourth quarter. Yeah,
I like that too. I like that they're, you know, they had some time to think about it with that break. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone was able to like understand what their assignment and role was on that play to help make it go. So,
and honestly, that's probably the best time to do like trick plays. I thought he dialed that up perfectly too. Because of the timing,
you empty the bag when you're an underdog and you go into your reservoir of plays that you need, that you're like, you know what? There's two or three plays we can go into this and completely catch the defense with its pants down and get a first down or get a score when we need it. And Shanahan found it and picked the exact right time to use it. So more proof that he's the better of the two coaches in this game, even though Sirianni's won a Super Bowl and Shanahan has not.
I alluded to a breaking point had to happen at some point in Philadelphia. And I think we saw it with that little frustration, that little altercation between A.J. Brown and Nick Sirianni. So a lot of...
And how about George Kittle drank an entire bottle of tequila? Did you hear about this?
Mm-mm.
Yes, that was how he coped with this news. He ordered up a bottle of Patron. They brought it down to him, and he watched the second half, and apparently the bottle was empty by the time the guys got in to celebrate after the game.
Well, someone had a good time. Well, I don't know about a good time, but
I know. I think he was drinking a sorrow's
water. Yeah.
I think that was a coping mechanism, Pat.
Hey, but also, too, did you see the story about the plant that's next to their practice facility that's causing
that? That is mind blowing.
That's crazy.
What is that all about, Pat? You buy that?
I mean,
what's going on?
I might have to with
where there's smoke, there's fire sometimes.
That too. Crazy. But all of the research that's coming behind it and saying the acronym or whatever that's pushing out this energy or whatever, but it's supposedly causing soft tissue injuries. It said that the BPM or something like that's pushing out is causing the breakdown the cartilage,
like the tissue,
ligaments, yeah, and bones.
Wow, that's
something crazy.
I mean, yeah, there's
a, and they have been dealing with soft tissue ACLs for the last 5 years.
Most injured team in the entire NFL, it seems like, every year.
And the way that their injuries happen, like, I'll never forget Dre Greenlaw just trying to take the field and blowing something out.
Exactly. So, there might be some truth to that.
There might be some truth. We will see. But for Philadelphia, a lot of questions will be answered in the offseason. The 49ers, battered and bruised, will move on to next weekend. We'll preview that matchup on Friday. Bills and Jags, because we all had the Bills moving on. I'm not sure.
No, we had the Jags.
Oh, you guys have the Jags moving on. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, but Josh Allen, again, we talked about Josh Allen having to put the cape on many times this season. And he had to do it again against a very, very good effort from Jacksonville. So, Pony, give me your reaction to this game. What was your biggest takeaway from Josh Allen and the Bills kind of pulling this one out?
I mean, a lot of the things I said about the Bills offense and what might happen in this game came to fruition. The Jags had not given up a running back had not gone for 100 or even 75 yards against them this year. And James Cook averaged 3 yards a carry and was held to 46 yards. So they took away statistically. I mean, Allen's their best player, but Cook was the leading rusher in the NFL this season. Okay. And they took him out, as they've done with every running back, Jonathan Taylor twice. They did it all year. And so all the pressure was on Allen. And that's problematic for the Bills now, or should be, because they don't have great playmakers at wide receiver. And against that defense, which came in second in the league in takeaways, top 10 defense, to have the kind of fourth quarter that he did in game in general just speaks to his greatness. I mean, unlike, say, Lamar Jackson, who I think we can point to these playoff losses and say, man, there's a difference between what he does in the regular season and the playoffs. Allen always puts up numbers in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He just is on the wrong end of things where his kicker misses a kick. There's 13 seconds left in the game and his defense can't get a stop. He reaches for a first down. It looks like he has it, but they give the call to Kansas City. I mean, he's had some rough breaks. The only real game in the playoffs in his career where I feel like he didn't really play well was that snow game they had against Cincinnati a few years ago. In which the Bengals just went in there and kind of pushed them around. But outside of that, man, he's one of the great playoff quarterbacks of all time. Statistically, even though he doesn't have a Super Bowl or Super Bowl appearance to show for it, and he proved it in this game. He completed 80% of his passes on 35 dropbacks against that defense. The first and 10 throw to Brandon Cooks was incredible. Mm-hmm. It was, if not for that Caleb Williams throw where he looked like Michael Jordan with his leg split, it would have been the best throw of this weekend, but it has to be second because that Williams play, I think, came on fourth down. Allen was just spectacular. And I mean, Pat, that's what people have asked out of him. Now that you don't have Mahomes, Jackson, or Burrow in the playoffs, that's kind of what people are expecting from him. And he delivered one of his best games as a Bills quarterback, and they needed every bit of it because they ended up winning the game by only 3 points.
Yeah, Josh Allen, he was lights out. Like you alluded to, completing 80% of his passes. He was 28 to 35, 273 yards. You know what's more mind-boggling is that this is his first road playoff win. You know,
it's the Bills' first one since 92.
I know. That's pretty crazy, but they got the job done. But I don't, in my opinion, I know Josh Allen been able to put the cape on all year long.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's going to be sustainable. Now I'm missing Gabe Davis, you know, another one of their, you know, pass catchers, you know, not many pass catchers that they do have on their roster. But missing Gabe Davis, I think, is going to be a big problem because now you really don't have any size at your receivers. You don't throw Keon Coleman the ball at all. You got Shakir and Cook, and they probably stand 5'10", you know, on books. You know, so that's it's going to be pretty hard for those guys to consistently, you know, create separation and get behind defensive backs, you know. So that and they also, obviously, I know they played against the number one rush team, but James Cook is going to have to be, you know, more valuable for this Buffalo Bills offense moving forward, because the teams are going to get tougher, the road is going to get tougher, and so you're going to need all of your five-star players. You don't have many of them on as your skill players. You need your five-star players to be five-star players, because there is no tomorrow, you know. So coming in this game, I know Josh Allen, he has to put the cape on because there is no tomorrow. He has to be Superman. But I still feel there's not enough around him for him to sustain that throughout this playoff. It's going to be a tough go against who? Because who will they play next? They'll play
Denver.
Yep. So now they're going to go on the road in Mile High, play Denver against, you know, the team that pretty much has a degree at sacking the quarterback. They have a defensive backfield that's not going to allow plays, wide open receivers just get behind them when they're supposed to be guarding that guy. That happened a couple of times in that ball game, Jacksonville and Buffalo Bills. So I believe it's just going to be a little bit tougher picking for Josh Allen to be Josh Allen, just because of the pressure that Denver is able to apply, and also the guys they have in the back end that's able to take the ball away. So again, Josh Allen, he was spectacular in this ball game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jacksonville Jaguars just came up short. Trevor Lawrence, those two costly interceptions, the one to end the game, something I know that he want back, especially the first one he threw in the first half right to the linebacker in triple coverage.
I know he
wish he would have had that throw back. But again, Trevor Lawrence is one of those guys as well in the playoffs. Your name is built in the playoffs. Like the regular season, all of that stuff is cute. Yeah, you put yourself in the position, but now can you seal and deliver the envelope? And, you know, and as of right now, Trevor Lawrence cannot do that in the postseason. I know the Jacksonville Jaguars hate, you know, when people talk about their quarterback, but those are the facts, you know. And when playoff time comes around, he don't play his best football. And that's been happening, and that's been shown time and time and time again. So I like what they have in their head coach. I believe he'll be able to alleviate some of that stress with the running game and being able to do things that Trevor Lawrence is really, really good at. I believe the defense, they're young enough. They're probably going to have to get another corner. The Newsom trade didn't work out for them, so I know they kind of disappointed in pulling off that trade. But we'll see what they're going to do as far as their corner. But their defense is pretty much going to be returning, so they have all the pieces to be back where they are. But it's all going to rely on Trevor Lawrence. Can he take that next step, not only in the regular season but in the postseason?
You know, I want to first, before I get to the Jags, I got to give Tre'Davious White credit. Last year, he played with the Rams and Ravens, and I was at the Bills-Ravens playoff game, and he got picked apart by the Bills. They threw at him a bunch. He had a big pass interference penalty late in that game that helped Buffalo win. I thought his career was over, and he goes back to Buffalo. And since like week three, he's been one of the best corners in the entire NFL, which is a testament to him. Is really, he's one of those. And I know some guys take this like the wrong way. He's one of those Hall of Very Good players, Pat. Mm-hmm. He's one of those guys that I think will get honored by the Bills when his career is over, like in their Hall of Fame. He's not a Canton guy, but he's like, in my opinion, a Bills Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. And he was on the team when they lost to Jacksonville in the 2017 playoffs, when they ended an 18-year playoff drought and went and lost when Tyrod Taylor was the Bills quarterback before Josh Allen even got there, and he's making big plays in this game. As far as the Jags go, you know, I remember when the Steelers lost the Super Bowl to the Packers going back 15 years ago, and I had Steelers players tell me one of the reasons why we lost this game is because the game plan was to get Ben Roethlisberger an MVP award. Mm. And if we had just run the ball more, we would have beaten Green Bay. They really believe that, a lot of the guys on that team. Pat, I don't understand why they didn't run the ball more in this game. You cannot, for the life of me, make me understand how Etienne only had 10 carries and Tootin only had four. Every time that dude touched the ball, it looked like
he 12 was yards. Yeah, 12.8 and Etienne 6.7.
So they had 23 total carries, but that's misleading because there was a lot of Lawrence designed runs.
Yeah.
Their two running backs got 14 carries in a close game. I'm sorry, that's unacceptable. It just is. I understand Lawrence got hot in the second half of the year and they've got good depth at wide receiver. But the Bills' problem is their run defense. It has been for a couple years. Buffalo's number one in pass defense. If you need to play a numbers game, put in an extra offensive lineman or extra tight end and even up the numbers in the box and run at them. Mm-hmm. They cannot stop it. And I thought that was a big mistake by Liam Cohen and something he's going to have to learn and deal with in the offseason, having coached now his first playoff game. I thought he beat himself with that strategy in this game. And I also, what was going on with that thing after the game with him? Did anybody hear that?
I really wanted to ask you about that, especially as
that? Did you see that? Mm-mm, so that lady said, "Great job, keep your head up."
Oh, the reporter. What was that?
What's your opinion on that, Pony? Do you think that's wrong place, wrong time for a reporter and a journalist?
Yeah, definitely. You pull him to the side.
I'm not gonna like do the thing where I'm a journalist because I'm not. I talk about football for a living. But I can promise you, if the Steelers lose this game tonight to Houston, if some reporter says to Mike Tomlin, "Hey, Mike, keep your head up," I'm going to want to throw my remote through the TV.
I think he would too. I think Mike Tomlin would not want to hear that at that time right now.
And he'll walk out probably.
Yeah, that's not the time.
That's just so weird. I've never seen anything like that in my life, Pat. Have you?
I haven't. And yeah, she should have held that till after. And You're probably going to see Coach tomorrow, and you could have told Coach that another time. That was definitely not the right place and right time.
Not right place, not right time. I appreciate Auntie with the sentiments, though. It sounded like Auntie, you saw it warmed him up too. You saw the twinkle in his eye. You know what I mean? It just proved that some nice words from Auntie can feel like a hug at the right time. But I agree. There's a time and a place for that. But the Bills move on. They, like you said, Pat, go mile high, and the Jags got something to build off of after a nice season one from Liam Cohen. Let's go to the game of the weekend, in my opinion. Packers-Bears, because Caleb Williams looked like it was down and out. Looked like he was down and out. The Bears looked like they were down and out. They come storming back and put up 25 points in the fourth quarter to win the football game. Pat, you called it. I don't know how nervous you were at this point and during this game, but you had faith in the Bears and they came through for you. What's your reaction?
Yeah, man, they came through and they are the new cardiac kids. No doubt about it. And Caleb Williams is the Iceman of the NFL right now, because it just seemed to me as of this year, no moment has seemed to be too big for him in this Chicago Bears football team. Yes, we still have some concerns about the defense. Can they get stops? Or if they don't get stops, can they still win the ball game? Jordan Love threw for four touchdowns. Still wasn't his best game as well. He missed a bunch of throws in that ball game. He probably could have threw for, 450 if he was able to connect on a couple of those throws. So It was definitely the game of the week. Both teams came out and played well. Chicago got off to a slow start, going down 21-3, I believe, in halftime, and just came out in the second half and just flipped the strip. And you're talking about running the football. I believe that's something that the Chicago Bears was doing a little. They was trying to be a little bit too cute in the first half, especially on second downs, putting themselves behind the sticks even further, making that third down hard to convert. But they came out in the second half, really leaned on Munangai, and finding ways to really lean on that defense and breaking them down as much as possible, and then allowing Caleb Williams to work his magic in the fourth quarter. You alluded to that throw that he made in the fourth quarter for that touchdown. That was by far probably the throw of the year. Damn, the throw of the weekend. That was the throw of the year for him to able to make that throw in that situation, sees it on the line, tight-roaded it on the sideline to Loveland. Man, that was just incredible. And I will say this time and time again, he throws his best ball when he's rolling out to his left, which is probably the hardest thing to do
for a
right-handed quarterback. And he make it look so effortless and flawless. And so it just looks so dope to see him continue just to maneuver and throw the ball, you know, unorthodox. You know, so this was a huge, huge win for the Chicago Bears. But again, this is not a situation they haven't been in all year. I mean, they've been in this situation for the most part the entire course of the season. So they was in familiar territory, and they passed that test with flying colors. So, yeah, it sucked to see the Green Bay Packers go home, but they was limping into this ball game. Jordan Love coming off a concussion, only having a half a sack since Micah Parsons have not been in the lineup, haven't been able to get to the quarterback, take the ball away, and really play that fast, ferocious defense that they was playing early on in the year. And, you know, they just wasn't able to make no plays. Bad eyes from guys in the secondary. That smoke screen and go, that was the call of the game because how they set that play up.
Yeah.
Offset tackle to the strong side of the formation, put the tight end to replace the right tackle, showed the screen, had the offset tackle come out acting like it was a screen, got Ballantyne eyes to attract to him. And that's what ended up giving DJ the wide open game-winning touchdown down the sideline. So it was a great game, but Green Bay defense haven't been the same since Michael Parsons been out. Jordan Love, again, he had a great game, but he still left some throws out there. And just thinking about it, if he was or able to connect with those throws, they probably would have walked out of Soldier Stadium with a W, but he was not able to hit those throws. Josh Jacobs wasn't able to really affect the game, only averaging 2.9 yards a carry. So the Chicago Bears, I won't necessarily say they got lucky, but they are definitely very, very grateful to be able to win this ball game, seeing how they started the ball game and seeing where the game was in the fourth quarter. So hats off to Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams, and the Chicago Bears team and organization to continuing to find ways to win and not beat themselves like they used to do before Ben Johnson got there.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, this is now a fairy tale season for the Bears. I mean, you could not have scripted Ben Johnson's first year any better. He gets the job. They go from worst to first. They get a home playoff game at Soldier Field in the snow against their arch rival. They had not beaten the Packers in the playoffs since 1941. It was only the third time they played each other in the playoffs, exactly. And to have the win like they did, where not only do you win, but Caleb Williams looks like a future franchise quarterback and Super Bowl winning quarterback, you also come back in a way where it rips Green Bay's heart out. And who knows what's going to happen now with Matt LaFleur. I think they'd be crazy to fire him. I really do.
Yeah,
I think that would be a big mistake.
Working on the deal.
Yeah, they should. I mean, I get it. Only 9 wins. They lost 5 in a row to end the season. You don't want, you know, one person that's not a quarterback should not mean that much to your team, even though Micah Parsons is one of the best offensive players in the NFL. But evidently he does. I mean, that's why you give up the first round picks and pay him like they do. So that's an excuse that the Packers have for the way their season went south. I give Dennis Allen credit in the second half. His defense did not pack it in after playing an awful first half. They got stops until the Packers scored that fourth quarter touchdown to go up by 11. I mean, they really forced some punts and got the ball back on defense. And there was no evidence in the first 30 minutes of the game that they were going to be able to do that. And then McManus, to me, is a huge goat from this game. To miss 3 kicks, I did not think that the kick right at the end of the first half was going to be, something that shifted the momentum of the game, but it kind of did because they could have gone up 3 touchdowns there. Miss an extra point, which is horrible. And then the worst thing was the 44-yard field goal that he missed at the end. And their guy was 3 for 3 for Chicago, and Santos made a 51-yarder, that I was like, why are they kicking a field goal to go down 12 in the fourth quarter? You know, I thought they should have maybe went for that. Why? I mean, it's still a two possession game if he makes this, but evidently Ben Johnson knew what he was doing because they were able to come back anyways.
Hey, honestly, I was so happy that he did take the points, because I was like, man, you're going to make this game.
Because no one else was taking the points this weekend, Pat.
Exactly. A lot of teams were very, very aggressive, going for every fourth down. Hell, even in that game, going for fourth down twice on your own 30.
Yep.
Like, that's not aggressive. That's just, I don't even want to say the word, because I don't like saying that around my kids. But yeah, that's just that word.
You have to put a dollar in the swear jar, Pat. Don't do it. Don't do it. Yeah, but I think Caleb Williams, especially the back end of the season, has earned a lot of respect from a lot of different people. So great to see him play well. Great to see the Bears play well. They move on. Let's go to a jump scare, because the Panthers gave the Rams a jump scare down there in Carolina. And I think a double-digit point favorite for a lot of
sports. Told you they weren't winning by no 10.
Yeah, I was wrong about that.
for the Rams, man, like we kind of alluded to it, how the NFC South was the Rams' bugaboo for a little bit, and it almost clipped them. But they pull it off. Stafford kind of clutches up and gets it done down the stretch. Pony, what's your reaction? What did you think of, one, the way the Panthers kind of stood in the center of the ring and went toe-to-toe with the Rams? And how do you feel about the Rams moving on?
Well, I don't feel great about the Rams moving on if I'm someone that's picked the Rams to win the Super Bowl. And I've got them going all the way to the NFC Championship game. I don't have them as the favorites like FanDuel does. But this game, to me, continued to reaffirm something that's true. And it's James's Super Bowl winner. Sorry, James. They've not played a complete game where the Rams have put together 60 minutes of good football on offense and defense now in a while. In the Atlanta game, they played terrible on offense. They got exposed by Bijan Robinson. Defensively, even against Arizona in week 18, they didn't look great, and they were trying to win that game. 31 points to Carolina. You've got Jalen Coker cooking you. You've got Bryce Young. Even though he only threw one touchdown pass in this game, you've got Bryce Young delivering again on third downs and making plays downfield and executing two-minute drill offense and things like that against you. You know, Tet McMillan. Maybe Carolina is even able to get themselves in field goal range if Horn doesn't drop that ball on fourth down. I mean, that should have been a first down conversion. He's open. It's a good throw. He just didn't, you know, he started running with the ball before he had it, essentially.
Yeah, he got to understand how to go down, how to catch that ball. That's a body catch right there.
You're right, because you got the first down. You can go to the ground there. It's not a bad play. So, you know, Stafford had an MVP moment. Great. You've got Devontae Adams afterwards talking about what Stafford said in the huddle about ripping their hearts out. And, okay, if the Rams go on to win the Super Bowl or get to a Super Bowl, that'll, you know, live on forever as a really cool moment in Rams history. But I'd be worried if I were them. Carolina was a 10-loss team, and they needed 59 minutes and change to beat them after they got out to a 2-touchdown lead too, by the way. So Carolina, I think, got a moral victory here. They should feel good going into their offseason that they finally are not one of the worst teams in the NFL, and they've got something to build off of. But I would not feel great if I'm a Rams fan right now, Pat, because their expectations are Super Bowl or bust. And they did not look like a Super Bowl contender in this game, in my opinion.
Yeah, they did not look like a Super Bowl contender. It kind of looked like the game in what it was, week 13, I believe, they played each other. So it kind of looked like that game as well. Although the Carolina Panthers defense is, I believe they're right in the middle of the pack, kind of like 15, 16, 20 in a couple positions, but they're scrapping.
The Rams won the turnover battle in this game, unlike the last time, and they still only won by three.
Exactly. But I love how scrappy the Carolina Panthers defense is. You know, like I said, they're not highly ranked in none of the major categories, but when you put the film on, those guys fly to the football, those guys play together, and they play fast. You know, so, and when you're able to do that as a defense, a lot of the times that cover up from the mistakes that you may have, or that cover up from the mishaps or the mislaps that you may have in the secondary or up front, because now you guys are playing fast, you guys are playing with energy, and you guys just playing at one speed. You know, so I believe that's something that definitely, you know, helped the Carolina Panthers defense. But the Rams.
Yeah, the Rams were 3 of 13 on third down. That ain't gonna cut it.
That's exactly what I was about to say. The Rams, the biggest thing about the Rams, again, since we know they offense is predicated off the pass, that's why to me it's going to be hard for them to go into Soldier Field and try to get a win, just because the elements. And we saw how, you know, the Rams deal with the elements. And if Matthew Stafford is going to be throwing the ball, you know, 42 times, which is what he threw in Carolina, there's a lot of opportunities for the Chicago Bears defense to get their hands on the ball, which is the number one interception defense in the league. You know, yeah. So this is going to be one of those games where Kyren Williams, Blake Corum, they're going to have to run the ball effectively enough to where now Matthew Stafford don't have to throw the ball 45 times, because now all that's doing is putting yourself at a bigger risk of giving the opposing team the football. So I believe Sean McVay, I don't know what the weather's going to be just yet, but I know it's going to be cold as hell. But I know he's probably going to want to, I know Matthew Stafford is probably going to be the MVP of the league, but he is going to want to lean on this running game and his defense to get them out of this one, because I believe the element is going to play a big role into how this offense is going to be able to perform in this divisional round playoff game.
Adjustments have to be made, but they are former champions. Hopefully they can make those adjustments, but they cannot afford to kind of play the same game they just played against Carolina up in Chicago. Might be a much different result.
Rams favored. 3.5-point favorite on FanDuel.
That's very surprising.
Make every moment more with FanDuel. 3.5-point spread.
Mm. That's very surprising to me. We'll see if that changes by the weekend. But all right, Pony, we alluded it. We've previewed it already, but we got one more chance to go over this Monday night matchup. Your Steelers welcome the Houston Texans, the league's best defense. You've had a couple of days to kind of ponder this, man. Are you any more confident than you were on Friday when you picked the Steelers? Are you ready?
No, it's a really weird thing here. A lot of Steelers fans have talked themselves into winning this game and then going to New England next week and beating the Patriots and having this magical run through the playoffs. It's the number one defense in the NFL. My concern is, how are guys going to get open in this game? You've got Stingley, you've got Lassiter, Petrie, you've got defensive ends and Anderson and Hunter who can apply pressure.
Linebackers.
I mean, how do they get open? You know, you've got Metcalf coming back, but you've got a great corner tandem. Stingley was named first team all pro. You know, Aaron Rodgers is going to want to get rid of the ball quickly, but to who? If the running backs are chipping defensive ends to help tackles, they're going to be delayed getting out into their route. You know, our Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Adam Thielen, are they getting open against these Texans corners? Darnell Washington, who's been such a great blocking tight end for the Steelers, is out for this game with a broken forearm. One of the biggest humans in the entire NFL. So I don't know. I also kind of feel like Stroud is underrated now. Like, I've heard so much crap talk on him this week in Pittsburgh, like he's not a big time quarterback. The last three times I've seen him in big, you know, big playoff situations, he was great against Georgia in the playoffs at Ohio State. He beat Herbert in the playoffs last year. He put like 50 on the Browns defense and Myles Garrett in the playoffs 2 years ago. Like, I don't know. I think he's a pretty poised quarterback. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to turn the ball over. Maybe he doesn't make big plays and they've got a punt, but there's a reason why the Texans have the fewest giveaways in the NFL this year. So I don't know, Pat. I don't have a great feeling. Maybe you can talk me into it.
Man, you know, Pony, I don't have a good feeling about it either. I know I picked Pittsburgh earlier on in the week with Mike Tomlin playing on Monday night. you know, coming off a big win, getting DK Metcalf back. But then I started thinking, see, they're undefeated in the Monday night and Monday night football during the regular season. Pittsburgh still has never played a Monday night game in the playoffs. So
correct.
That stat can kind of be thrown out of the window. That's a BS stat right there. So then I started thinking about, again, some of the woes that the Pittsburgh Steelers been having when they do get in the playoff. Again, I do think this is their best shot of winning a playoff game, but I think it's going to be very, very difficult with the pass rush, the linebackers, and the secondary that the Houston Texans have. I just don't think the Pittsburgh Steelers is going to have enough offense to be able to move the ball up and down the field to put points on the board. The only way the Pittsburgh Steelers can win this game, if they make this game Pittsburgh style. That's the only way I could see them winning this ball game, making it real rugged, making it ugly, making the field position game, making forcing the offensive coordinators of Houston, making the decision if they want to go for it or play the field position game or take the 3 points. I think that's what it's going to come down to. But if this game comes down to a Pittsburgh Steelers style game, I give the edge to Pittsburgh. But if they cannot get to C.J. Stroud and let Nico Collins and the running game by committee start to hurt them, then that's when I think the Pittsburgh Steelers will be in trouble. But because, as you said as well, I don't think they have guys who will be able to get open on a consistent basis on this defensive backfield. And not only that, we know Aaron Rodgers is going to try to get rid of the ball fairly quick because of the pass rushes who the Houston Texans have. So it's going to be a very, very interesting game plan to see how the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to attack this Houston Texans defense. And it's also going to be interesting to see how the Houston Texans attack the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, just because of they don't have a big-time running back. C.J. Stroud kind of been on a roller coaster ride all year. He has been playing better after he got back in the lineup from a concussion, but we still haven't really seen those big C.J. Stroud games. You know, so if they can find ways to rattle him a little bit in the pocket and get him to seeing things and get his feet, get him with the happy feet, I believe the advantage goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers. But if they are not able to do that, I believe this Houston Texans defense is going to take over the game.
Stroud's only been sacked one time in the last four games, which we're so used to watching him run for his life and get killed back there by that offensive line. The Steelers right. got to change that stat tonight, because if they don't, he's got wide receivers galore. We saw the Steelers secondary give up those big passing plays to Lamar in the fourth quarter in the last game. The Texans have hit more plays in the passing game of 40 plus yards than any team in the NFL. So Kyle Duggar and Jalen Ramsey need to rebound from the games they had against the Ravens for sure, or they're in trouble here, Pat. And that would be 9 years without a playoff win, which might as well be 900 years for Steelers fans.
Steelers land, yes, sir. So, no, the confidence level is not going up.
No, but I will say this.
One question.
If the Texans win, and that's what I think I'm predicting and what Pat seems to be coming around on, I think if Houston wins, I think any of the four teams that are left in the AFC can get to the Super Bowl. Houston, Denver, Buffalo, and New England. I think any of the four can go. Right now, Buffalo on FanDuel is favored to beat Denver, and the Rams are favored to beat the Bears. Already, it is the first time in the history of the NFL playoffs in which two road games are favored divisional round weekend. That's never happened. And we already have two. We might have a third if the odds makers like Houston over New England, which is possible.
Wow.
Crazy.
All right. Well, that was our wild card recap. We will preview those great divisional round games Friday. Look for the podcast in your feed. Subscribe, rate, review. It's First and Pod with Andrew Filippone, Patrick Peterson, and James Jackson. Thanks for listening.